2 Kings chapter 4, please. And verse number 18. Thanks. 2 Kings chapter 4, verse number 18. And when the child was grown, it fell on a day that he went out to his father, to the reapers, and he said unto his father, "My head, my head." And he said to a lad, "Carry him to his mother." When he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon, and then died. And she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God, and shut the door upon him, and went out. And she called unto her husband and said, "Send me, I pray thee, one of the young men." Then if we could look in Luke, probably one of the best known stories in the Bible. Luke 15, verse number 11. And he said, "A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me.' And he divided unto them his living. Not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want." Verse 17, "And when he came to himself, he said, 'How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee.'" Verse 20, "He arose and came to his father. When he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him." Verse 22, "But the father said to his servants, 'Bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf, and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to be merry. Now the elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing." Verse 28, "And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him." Verse 31, "And he said unto him, 'Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and he was lost and is found.'" Some time ago, a few months ago, two or three months ago, I sat in a Tim Hortons coffee shop with a young lady. I've been there many times before. I meet her on a fairly regular basis. And after we talked again for a little while, she said to me, "Steve," with tears running down her face, she said, "Steve, you've been a father to me that I have never had." You want to know something? She has a father. I'm not here to speak to everybody, Dave. I'm not like our brother Hall. He said he doesn't speak to families. I'm going to speak to fathers here today, I trust, and that God would give help to speak to every father that is sitting in this audience here today. And some of the thoughts I have, I trust, could be applied to those that take a place of being elders amongst us in God's assembly, because as far as I'm concerned, elders, you can buy 100 of them for 99 cents. But I'll tell you something, when it comes to a man with a shepherd's heart, it's absolute pure solid gold. It's a rare commodity. And I was in a home, I visited in it a few times just of late, and they're not Christians. They've got 5 kids. I'll tell you, I was so impressed the other day that I was there. I was absolutely deeply moved. I'm fooling around in the living room because Father was late. He had to work overtime, and I didn't know when I went. And so I thought I'd talk to the Father. Usually he comes home about 4:15 or something. And I thought I'd talk to him until supper's ready, and I'd leave because I'd visit the mother some, and I wanted to visit the Father. And so I'm fooling around with a kid from about 8 years old down to a little guy who was about 7 or 8 months old. And trying to... I enjoy playing with the kids, reading them Curious George and all the rest of it. And suddenly, a car door slammed in the driveway. Those kids, the oldest to the youngest, jumped up. Well, not quite the youngest. He couldn't jump up. The oldest one went all the way down, jumped up, and they ran to the door and went flying through the door. And it was cold out. And they were, "Oh, but Daddy, Daddy, Daddy," they're, you know. And the little guy on the floor, he's just a booting along as fast as he can go to get towards the door. What was it? What was that?
I'll tell you, those kids love their father. And those kids recognize that my dad loves me. And I covet that family for the Lord Jesus Christ. Because they've got, well, you know, we should covet everyone for the Lord. Because they're tremendous. But I read it in 2 Kings, we read together in 2 Kings about the Shunammite woman. And she's got a husband. Yes, there's a husband that is absolutely consumed with his business. There's nothing more important than that business that he's got, the farm. And maybe we're not all farmers here today. Maybe we're occupied with whatever business. I care not what it is, or our work, or whatever it is that is consuming us. Has consumed him. Oh yes, he took time. The mother wanted to build a little room in the side of the house for the man of God, and he went to work and slapped a few boards together and put a roof on and put a table there and a few other little chairs and a few other little items in the room, and he figured that he had done his deed. But the harvest is on. He's out in the field. And he's occupied with all the men and the little boy that they have longed for, that mother has prayed for and yearned for, and now finally God has given it. This little boy. And he's growing up, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, doesn't tell us. And he's gone out to the field. And I suppose it's hot. And it would appear from the story that he's gets a sunstroke or something of that nature. And he comes at the time of his most desperate need. His father needs. He's crying out, "My father! My father!" What's the father do? Says to a young lad, "Take him to his mother." There's the father, a time when he is so greatly needed by his son. And he says to a young lad, he doesn't even so much as say to the one of the hired men. He says, "Take him to his, you know, one of the men, to the lad." So there goes that lad, I'm suggesting, maybe 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, and he's got a tremendous responsibility. He's taking a little boy that's crying out about his head, and that young lad has got a tremendous responsibility, a responsibility the father won't accept. And he's saying, why? Because the farm's so important, the business, you know, we've got to get the crop off. Now, I'm not setting aside business. I'm not setting aside doing well in business and being diligent in business. I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about, where does our priorities lie? Is it any wonder? My father used to tell us as kids, and I think he made a point, I think he was probably right back then, he says, "Boys, this is the best years of your life. I'm going to tell you something, I don't believe it anymore." Do you ever, any of you, ever walk into the high school or walk through the corridor? Do you ever walk down to the college and go in there? I've gone with some of the young folks that we're with working amongst the lecture just to see what they think. Incredible pressure in the place. There's a brother. Jake went back to school. He told me, he's 39 years old, goes to the college. He told me of sitting just the other day, of sitting in the cafeteria, and he says that the language and the stories and the filth. But he said, "I have stopped going there altogether." He said, "I go down to a study room and I take my lunch and I eat down there because I can't stand it." And what, here's a young man and a young boy and a father that's too busy with his business. What about you? What about me? I'm a grandfather. I ask myself, how am I doing? I have taken our girls, our children over the years. And I've gone down with them to Jim Horton's. Great spot. Every father needs to do it frequently. I've gone down there and seen the kids. Tell me something. How am I doing as a father? And you know something? There's been times that I've wept in a coffee shop because I found out I'm not doing very good. And they tell you, as a father, are you approachable? Am I approachable as a father? And am I there when my kids need me? Because my kids do need me. They need me desperately. And I'm not sure that it ever goes away. Does it ever depart? Do you ever sit down and write your children a letter? I've got at home a drawer. The house burns down. I don't care about anything in the house, but I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to lose that drawer full of letters. Because I appreciate that. If you ever want to sometime have occasion to sit down and stop, maybe feel sorry for yourself, maybe cry, whatever. Because I do. Pull them up and start to read them. Some of their little block letters in their block
printing, you know, as they're just learning to write. I put them in the drawer and go through them. And I write them a letter, and they'll write back, and there's times we sat at the table and we never so much as even conversed, talked about anything that was in the letter. But I tell you something, they bared their souls in those letters. And I got to find out what they were thinking in the letters. And I sometimes say to my wife, she was far better than I was. I've said to my wife, sometimes I wish I could live my life over, because I think that I would do things just a little bit different. But now, what about you? The reason I read it's in Luke, there's a tremendous story about a father. I know it's the prodigal son, and yet you learn so much about the father. But what true fatherhood is? Do you know that every father here today, that our children, I think Ephesians chapter 3, verse 14 and 15 would teach us that our children get a perception of what God is like from you and me as their physical, earthly fathers. If you're hard, and you're mean, and you're miserable, and grouchy, then that's what the children think of God. And if you're mean, they get their opinion of what God is like from you. And you and I, as fathers, have got a tremendous responsibility to try to be approachable by our children. Here's a father in Luke 15. I'll tell you one thing about him. That father was approachable. Twice over, that son says, that son two times went to the father. Before he ever went to the far country, he went to the father. He asked him for the goods. And when he was in the far country, he said, I'll go to my father. And are you and I, as brothers and sisters, and as fathers and mothers, particularly fathers in my mind, are you and I approachable? Our brother's been speaking of suicide. Is it any wonder? Is it any wonder? In all the years, and I'm not being critical of anybody, I hope you know that, but I'm 57 years old, and in all the years, only once, on one single occasion, I'm sorry, on an occasion of a period of times, one brother, in all the years, ever came to my place and talked to me to encourage me. What? I think, is it possible? I'll tell you something, it was the lowest spot in my life. I'd just been married, living in Toronto. Tough going, problems, ready to throw your hands up and say, oh, forget it. And nobody cared, it didn't seem. And one night, dear brother Frank White, God bless him, he's 90-some years old and he's still living. But one night he knocked on the door, opened the door, and there's Mr. White. He's standing there and he's got his old, worn old Bible underneath his arm. He's thinking of me. He came in, he sat down in the living room. After a little bit, he said, place me in talk. We went down to the basement. And in the dusty old basement, Mr. Frank White tried to encourage me. I want to tell you something. That man changed my life. And I've written him on numerous occasions and thanked him for a life that was changed by a man that cared. Do we have any here today that care? Fathers and mothers that care, that are approachable? Or you always write. The kids are afraid to come to you because you here's a father, he was approachable. And what are we? Are we approachable? Then this father as well, he was generous. He divided unto them as living. That doesn't mean, in fact, if you look at the word up in the dictionary, I think you'll find it doesn't mean to just a matter of he took the dollars and cents and divided it all up, but he divided his very self. He sent them away with his heart. And when that boy started off down the road with his pocket full of money, he knew he was carrying his father's very heart with him as he wandered down that road to the far country. And the father never left him. And way back home, there's a father. He's out in the barn. He's got the calf and he's getting them nice and fat. Why? Because he's sure that he's going to come back home. And there he sends him off and he's generous. He gave him himself. And I wonder, how generous are you as a father with your time? 168 hours every week. And how much time do you give undivided attention to your family, to your children? Undivided. I was raised in a home with 11 kids. And it wasn't many, many times. But I'm thankful for the few times that my father went with just me and him alone. You know, we get great things, holidays and all the other exotic things, four-wheelers, I don't care what all they are. We give them all to the kids, you know, and think you're going to buy them somehow or another, I guess, I don't know, keep them happy, whatever. Give them all this stuff. And my family, when I was a kid, took a trip to Florida. And you want to know something? I can't remember the drive there, I can't remember the drive back, I can't remember anything. But I can remember one thing of that whole trip. You know what it was? One day my dad says to me, "Steve, you get down in the back seat of the car, and we're going to go down and pick apples." It might have been oranges, I forget. I think it was apples. And I got in the back seat of the car and I hid down the back seat. And we drove off, and I can still remember him going to the tree, and he had a big bag with a zipper on the bottom, and we filled it full of apples, whatever, and put them into bushel baskets. And I remember it. Another occasion when he said to me, "Why don't you come with me today, and we're going to go and cut boards." He bought a bunch of lumber that had burned on one side or something. So we worked that day pushing them through a saw. I don't know, I was probably more nuisance than help. But anyway, got the whole job done and got the lumber piled up nice there. And that night was a Saturday night. I remember it almost like it was yesterday. My father died when I was 22 years old. But that night, sitting up in that pile of lumber, he says to me, "How would you like to go get us a Coke?" I got on a bike and I rode up the road, and I think Coke was about 10 cents. I got two bottles and booted back, and we sat in that pile of lumber that night. And to this day, I can remember some of the things that my father instructed me in, sitting on a pile of lumber, just me and him all alone. He was generous. My son-in-law, Jim Bergsma, was telling me about his brother's wife and her family. They're very well-to-do. Got pool, a large farm, every trinket, every toy, everything that you ever want, every kid wants, from, you know, four-wheelers to the whole thing. So his brother and his wife were going to go away for a few days, and they said to the kids, "Now, where would you like to stay? With mummy's dad, grandpa, and grandma, or with daddy's grandpa and grandma?" Daddy's grandpa and grandma, Brother Burson, has been to the house, been in the mud. They just have a white house and a shed and a few implements out there that are old. You know what the kids said? "Oh, we'd like to go to Grandpa Bergsmith." "Really? Why? Why do you want to go to Grandpa Bergsmith?" You know what they said? "Well, he takes walks with us. And he walks with us in the bush." That's what the kids are looking for. "Other grandpa? Oh, he's at the pool and he let them have anything to fool with that they want." But they're just looking for somebody to take a little walk with them in the bush. What about you? As a father, what about me? How much time have you taken with your children in the last month? I just read a little write-up, was it from Dr. Dobson or one of those individuals? And he was speaking about the 168 hours in a week. And in the world, the average family he was talking about, where he got the information, I'm not sure, but he said they spend about 2 to 3 minutes every week with their children individually. But he said, you know what Christians are? He said, they double it. They do about 5 minutes a week each with their children. That's not very much. And now, here's a man, and he's generous. But he's got values as well. He says, "All that I have is thine." Can we truly say to our children, all that I have is yours, and I will give you every single thing." He was generous, he had values, and he had tremendous value when it came to his sons. John Kennedy Jr. died just in that plane crash down by the East Coast there just a year or two ago with his wife and his wife's sister. And at that time, a bunch of stories about John Kennedy came in the news. I read one of them. It was touching. I don't put JFK Kennedy as being a tremendous father, but it was kind of interesting. It was 1961. The Cuban Missile Crisis was on at that time. And there's John Kennedy in the big room, the long table with the maps and Haig and all those different men giving all kinds of instructions, what they're going to do. And they're trying the most, I suppose, one of the most important events in the history of the United States. And nobody's going to disturb anybody because they are involved in everything, except there's a little two-year-old in the hallway, young Johnny. And he's pushing a little dinky toy down the hall, and it's got rubber tires on it. And the rubber tire comes off it. And he comes up to the door, and he's tired. And he goes into the room. He wants to go in. The guard at the door is supposed to keep everybody out, but what's he going to do with the little guy? And he's trying to say, no, you can't, and he starts to cry. And he thought, well, what can I do? So he opens the door and lets the little guy in, and he looks all around. He's looking for Daddy, and finally, there's Daddy. And he goes down the side of the table, and there's the President of the United States, but he's Daddy. And he stops, Daddy, tired, Daddy, Daddy, tired. And Daddy turns around, everything comes to a stop. Why? He takes the little boy on his knee, he fixes the tire. Now, I'm not putting him as the greatest father in the world, but I wonder, when it comes to you and I as fathers, what about us? How much time have you got to take and spend with your children? Trust. Here was a father, he trusted them, he's in there fatting, getting that calf good and fat because he had confidence that this son of mine is going to come back. And when it comes back, and when that boy comes back up the road, that father's not a complainer. He's not grumbling. He's not finding fault. He's not criticizing him. He's not telling him what you've done wrong and all the rest of it. He's simply thankful and glad. But I like verse 18. There's a boy that when he thinks of father, he thinks of heaven. And when he thinks of heaven, he thinks of father. And I wonder, what do our children think of? Some time ago, I was in Ontario, and I visited with a young man that's left the gathering of the Christians, and he's, whether he's saved, I don't know, and visited him for a little while. Oh, he says, Steve, yeah, come on. He said, my dad, he took all the part in the fellowship and the assembly, and he could preach and pray and plug away. But he said, he never so much as gave me 5 minutes. He was just too busy. What can I say? I know he's holding a grudge. I know he's got bitterness, and I can tell him that. But nevertheless, there's a father. And this father, he's got compassion. Because he looks up the road, and he sees that young son coming up the road, and he runs down the road. That's the only time, I think, in the Bible we have a picture of God running. And he's running down the road, and he falls on his neck, and he hugs him, and he's got full of compassion as he brings him back home. I wonder, have you and I got compassion? My father and mother, I'm sure, made many a mistake. But I'm going to tell you a couple things about them that I thank God for. I never once, ever, heard them, ever, arguing the one with the other. Not once in all the years. I'm sure they had disagreements. But I never heard them having an argument in front of us kids. I'm going to tell you something else about them. My father believed in discipline. And he believed in using the strap. And he believed in giving us a spanking. But I'm going to tell you something about it. When I had done something that I knew was wrong, and I knew I was going to get punished, my father would say, Stephen, go to your room. And I used to wonder, I know now, I used to wonder, why does he wait so long? Boy, I'll tell you, that 10-minute wait was just a pit. It was awful. It was worse than the spanking. And he'd come up. I know now why he didn't come up right away. He was not going to punish me in anger. And he was going to cool if he was angry before he went up to the room. And then he'd come up there and he'd talk to me and then he'd do the thing. And after he was done, it was a ritual. It was always a ritual. Same thing. He'd say, now, I'll be back. And I'd sit in that room sometimes as long as half an hour. He'd sometimes give me some verses to read. But then he'd say, he'd come back. And he'd get down on his knees. He'd pray. He said, now, after we're done, he said, we'll never mention it again. And he never, never did. And you and I, as fathers, we got one kick of the can. The kids are growing up. And they're going out into this world. And if they don't go out into this world with an absolute confidence of a father's affection and love towards them, they're going to be going out into a world. It's a cruel world out there. It's a difficult world. And you and I, as fathers, we need to seek to do what this father did. He brought forth the best robe and put it on him. You need to send our children out into this world fully equipped to face this world. And equipped by the fact that they know that there's a father that loves them. And I wonder if we all shouldn't do what I've done too often. And I've even done it just my daughters Donnie and Jim Bergsma, they were out having gospel meetings and in January. I took Zonia, said, what about going for lunch today? So Merle stayed home and looked after the children. We went for lunch. I said, Sonia, there's been something on my mind for a long time. A long time. I remember years ago when I embarrassed you in front of your friends. I said, I've thought of it. It's bothered me a little bit over the years. I thought maybe she had forgotten. You know what she said? Dad, she says, I never forgot it. And she cried. And she said, I want to tell you something I value. And I appreciate that you told me that you're sorry. What about you as a father? We're not always right. In fact, a lot of times we're absolutely wrong. We make all sorts of mistakes as parents. But are we too big to stop and tell the children, I'm sorry, I'm wrong, I made a mistake? This father wasn't just a pushover, you know. This father, he was firm. The elder brother coming, he wants to, he won't join with them. He wants to have nothing to do with the whole thing. And the father said, it is meet that we should make merry and be glad. It is right. And that father wasn't going to be just pushed around, but he was a father that had compassion. And if we can do nothing more in this little meeting, and that we as fathers would leave this place determined to turn the key in the office and to come home and to spend time with our children and to spend time with the Christians and to spend time visiting amongst the people that are in tremendous need. There's lonely Christians. There's Christians with problems. There's Christians with difficulties and with sorrows and with sadness and with grief. And they've got nobody that bothers with them, and they've got nobody that cares. I love the gospel. I'd rather work in the gospel 100 times. Why I like the gospel is that it works. And my wife says, oh, you just like the show job because that's like the wallpaper. I like her to do all the preparation. Get everything done, Merle. I said, get her all done there. Get it sanded. Get it painted. And I'll come around. I'll put that board around there because, boy, that's a show job. I like the gospel because it works. But what bothers me is that we've been 4.5 years in Lethbridge now. There's probably about 100 people that have got saved, plus about 70 Hutterites. And I am absolutely swamped trying to visit with the Christians that need to be visited with and occupied with them all day long and literally almost no time to reach out in the gospel. We have needs amongst us. We have needs for evangelists, I know. But I think there's a need amongst us that is far greater, far, far greater than an evangelist. That is a man that's got the heart of a shepherd and is prepared to go out and seek to work and visit and upbuild and strengthen and help and just be a blessing in this dark world in which we live. And there's so few that are doing it. My God, move our hearts that we might be just a little bit like the Father in Luke 15, and we might make up our mind that we will not be like the Shunammite woman's husband with no time for our children.